Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Welcome to a night of awkward personal revelations and hypocritical assaults on your character. My name is Christian Finnegan. You've all made a very wise entertainment choice. Congratulations to you, huh? Yes. This is going to be a big night. Can you feel it, guys? Can you feel the energy in here? Yeah. I like it, Philadelphia. I don't want this to be some typical night like, oh, it's Kim's birthday. Let's go see stand-up comedy. No. I want this to be a night we all remember, right? A unique moment in our lives, like your first sleepover party. Remember that? Remember the first time you went over your friend's house? Maybe you broke into the liquor cabinet? Maybe you watch a little Cinemax after dark? And then you show each other your dicks? Like that kind of night. The kind of night where we share something intimate and real and then never speak of it again. That's what I want tonight to be. Because I'm telling you people, I have jokes prepared for you. This is going to be funny. Let me tell you, if laughter truly is the best medicine, I sincerely hope you people have AIDS, because otherwise, all of my good work is going to have gone to waste.
Well, somehow, some way, Christian Finnegan has managed to scrape out a unique identity for himself as a stand-up comedian in a very crowded field. He's the guy who, on first glance, you may think he's gay, but he's not. Ask him about his father-in-law if you have any doubt. And maybe you think he's too smart to be a comedian, but he's not. Well, actually, he is pretty smart, and well, that one could probably go either way. So he's smart, he's topical, and he's not afraid to let a fart joke fly. Fly, not fry. Well, maybe, I don't know. If you're wondering from where you recognize his wit and clean good looks, think back to VH1's Best Week Ever, Comedy Central's Chappelle Show, or most recently, Countdown with Keith Olbermann on MSNBC. Finnegan just released a pretty damn funny DVD of his latest work entitled Au Contraire. You may have already seen a shorter version currently in rotation on Comedy Central. Now, you can order Christian's DVD and find out when he'll be in your town at his website, christianfinnegan.com. Christian, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are you?
Oh, just I love listening to my own comedy. It makes me, it makes me physically, like, revulsed. Slightly.
So we're off to a good start.
No, that's the way it is with most comedians, honestly. It can be unbearable to listen to your own material, especially because every once in a while you'll record something, you'll film something, and then right immediately afterwards you'll find a better way to say a joke, or you'll have changed a word, or, you know, or, and so whenever you hear the recorded version, all it does is just, you know, oh, I should have said it this way, and, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda. But I'm great.
Oh, but isn't that the process you go through, though, to reach the point where you record a special or you record a DVD? You've been working through that material for months, developing it. You reach the point and you get, okay, I'm ready, let's do it.
Inevitably, though, you know, you spend months hammering it out, and then inevitably, as soon as the pressure is off, it's as if somebody pulls back the curtain and, like, it just dawns on you, oh, that joke would have been so much funnier if I had said this word instead of that word, or if I had pulled this line, or if I had added that joke. Eventually, you just kind of have to get over that and just accept that, you know, nothing is going to be perfect, you know.
Yeah, I understand. I make my living as a writer, and I've been at it long enough that years ago I reached a point where I stopped looking at things once they were printed because it was just so depressing because, you know, things would be changed.
There's nothing
so you think I could,
Exactly.
Yeah, you're done.
The die is cast.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction what a smart guy you appear to be. I was kind of wondering what your educational background is.
It's all just nonsense and pretentious horse poop. I just say a lot of big words. I often don't know what they mean. I just sort of string them along and hope that no one is Googling me as I speak. I went to New York University.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Everybody's jumping on Wikipedia. I attended New York University. I was a playwriting major there. I started out as an actor, and then I quickly discovered that I cannot stand actors. I mean, some of my friends are actors, and, you know, I guess it's more the life of an actor that I find depressing. The rolling around on the floor and moaning and, you know, all these silly things you have to do as an acting student, which I'm sure are legit, but they just felt like a colossal waste of time. And so I switched majors and became a directing and playwriting major. But by the time I graduated, I was actually working more, doing some journalism. I was interning at the Village Voice and occasionally writing film and music reviews. And that's kind of what I thought, where I thought I was headed. After college, I worked in the publishing world for about a year and a half to 2 years at a literary agency where I would read sort of aspiring novelists' drivel all day long, which almost made me become an accountant. Like, nothing will ever stultify, is that the word? Nothing will ever, you know, put the kibosh on a creative impulse like working in publishing when you see all of the just wasted paper and dead trees devoted to some retired Air Force colonel's spy thriller. And, you know, I think people could react to something like that in two different ways. One person might think, man, if these people are writing books, I can write a book. I felt the exact opposite. I was like, why would I want to add to this pile of just, can I say the S word?
You may, absolutely.
Shoot, I couldn't say it. I tried to say it.
You can say it.
You know, right, here you go, ready?
Yeah.
Shit.
Ooh.
Shit. Zing, take that, old media. Anyway, so, yeah, I found that I needed to get out of that world. It was really making me depressed, and I wasn't writing anything. And I started going around. I was living in New York City already, and I started going to sort of open mics. I didn't know really what I wanted to do. I went to some poetry slams, which were absurd and ridiculous. And I went to see some sketch comedy, and then I went to this place called Surf Reality, which no longer really exists. But it was an alternative performance space on the Lower East Side of New York where mm-hmm. they would have these open mics every Sunday. And it was everything from stand-up comedy to music to poetry to dominatrixes, you know, whipping dudes with, you know, cat-of-nine-tails. Like, it was real – I don't know if you ever saw, like, the movie After Hours.
Yeah, sure.
It sort of reminded me of the image of Soho in that movie, like just people wearing ridiculous outfits and leather harnesses and stuff like that. And that's kind of where I started doing stand-up. There were a lot of stand-ups there, and it was, of course, very, quote-unquote, alternative at the time. But that's kind of what I needed because I didn't really feel comfortable, at least when I started at the comedy clubs. It just felt like a kind of a foreign world to me. And so I started going up at Surf Reality and another place called Collective Unconscious, and that's kind of how that ball got rolling, just because it was kind of a mixture of the two where it was like I was performing – but I was performing my own thoughts and ideas. So there you go.
Yeah. Now, I'm interested in hearing you a little more about your background. It kind of fits in. I wanted to ask you, I mean, in your own act, you make fun of your manliness, so to speak. You go in expecting that people are looking at you thinking, oh, he's gay, and, you know, you're not. But then I listen to the back. I listened to the background. You were going to do drama, and you interned at the Village Voice, and so, you know,
yeah.
I could see where some of that might have slipped in.
I mean, I have always kind of felt like a semi-anomaly. Like, a lot of my friends, when I've done that material in front of them, they're like, well, I never thought of you as gay or whatever. It's like, yeah, but you're a bunch of fellow wussy New Yorkers. Like, you know, we set the bar a little bit lower. You know, go out to the rest of the country, and you'll definitely get an idea of how the world perceives you. And, you know, when I go out to a lot of these, you know, comedy clubs all over the country, it's definitely something that's on people's mind. I can just feel it. I can sense it that I'm, you know, okay, this guy's very sort of, you know, effete looking, you know, and I Sometimes merely using a word like effete will brand you as queer in many parts of the country. So that's something I feel like I want to address just right off, and I think there's something kind of funny in there. All my life, women have thought I was gay. Like, my wife is still not entirely convinced I'm not. Like, she half-jokingly threatens me, you know, like, if you ever come out with a closet on me, I'm going to be devastated, like, you know. And she's joking mostly. Over the years, it becomes more and more of a joke. But it started off very seriously. I remember when I was in college, when I was a freshman in college, I was making out with this girl, and it was, you know, where all the freshman orientation, and so it's just like a bunch of horny 18-year-olds kind of hooking up, and, you know, it's like that first day of summer camp feel. And this girl, she kept on saying, you remind me of my friend, he's gay. And I'm like, well, I'm not your friend. And we started making out, and she stopped me in the middle of it, and she said, I don't know why, I just get the feeling you're doing this to prove something to yourself.
Oh, man. Wow. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's
wow.
Sort of an erection killer right there. But
well,
although I was 18, so probably not. I probably was just like, I'm still good to go if you are. Yeah. That's sort of
now,
the story of my adolescence.
Now, you are married, and
yes.
in au contraire, you tell a little bit about your father-in-law, and
yeah,
I'm most curious about your father-in-law. Is he really as you describe him? Is that all true?
Yes, he is serving 15 to 20 years for attempted murder at the state penitentiary in Huntsville, Texas, and he attempted to murder his third wife, and I grew up in suburban Massachusetts, and so my wife and I are definitely from different sides of the tracks, so to speak. You know, my wife grew up very much in that sort of classic, you know, relative poverty, you know, in the woods of Texas outside of Houston, you know, lived in a trailer that got repossessed, and for a while her and her family lived in a horse barn for a short period of time, you know, with an outhouse and bathing in a horse trough and stuff like that, and I, on the other hand, you know, grew up in the suburbs and went to soccer practice and did all of those things that other suburban kids do. So, yeah, it's definitely we come from different worlds, so to speak. And I've met him a few times. Every time that I would perform in Houston, we would drive up to the penitentiary. And I've met him a few times. It's always a little strange because I don't even get into this in the special, but he's also a deaf mute.
Oh, my God, you're kidding.
Yeah, I don't get into that in the special just because it's too much information. Like, it stops being comedy at that point. Like, I
was
going to
say, it would stop the show, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, people would just start raising hands, and it would turn into a Q&A. You know, I could joke about him being deaf, or I could joke about him being in prison, but the two of them together is just too much of a mind melt.
Now, does he know that he's part of your act? Does he know that much about you?
That's a good question. I think he does know. I mean, I'm sure he does. I mean, Cambry, my wife Cambry, you know, they correspond via letters all the time. And when we've gone to visit him, you know, we communicate, you know, she speaks sign language. So she acts as translator for me. And, you know, we talk about what I'm doing in my career and comedy and stuff like that. And I've actually done all of that material in front of her mother a number of times, you know, and she's always cool about it. But it is definitely a little weird, but I try to not get into the specifics of him as a guy too much. It's mm-hmm. like I talk about the my experience of it being married to her and sort of the general specifics of, you know, who he tried to kill and how long he's in jail and stuff like that. But I don't really... You know, I'm not reading the police report on stage or anything like that.
Oh. Now, parents are generally, I think anyway, they're almost the first source of material for a lot of comedians. You talk about what you know, and as you age, you
sure.
move into other things. And, of course, we see that go into, you know, there's an awful lot of mother-in-law jokes out there. But I thought it was really interesting for a guy to be talking about his father-in-law. Of course, if he's behind bars, if he's deaf and mute, you have a little less to worry about, I guess, than if you were joking
well,
about your mother-in-law.
For now.
Yeah, for now. Yeah.
until 2018. But it's a little different. I get along with my mother-in-law very well. She's great. But I've never, when I started doing comedy, one of the things I kind of swore is that I wouldn't talk about my family, just because I kind of thought of that, as very sort of run-of-the-mill, quote-unquote, hack. And now that I'm older and I have lived a little bit more and I understand a little bit more about comedy, I understand that talking about your family in and of itself is not hack. It's just how you do it, and are you relying on sort of tried and true stereotypes and cliches, or are you organically speaking of the way you perceive life and how, you know, and you look at somebody, the comedians I admire, you know, you're going to tell me that Bill Cosby himself, that that was hack material because he was talking about his family? No, that was incredibly rich, dense comedy there. And somebody like Louis C.K. or whoever, I needed to be more mature before I was going to address stuff like that. When I started comedy, I just kind of wanted to just make kind of surreal, silly jokes that weren't really attached to my life or how I felt about the world. And now I'm at the point where I want to start talking about things that mean a little bit more to me.
Wow. In one breath, you went from Bill Cosby to Louis C.K. That's I think you covered everything, didn't you?
I think of them as very similar. It's funny.
I don't
see them as different at all. I really don't. I mean, I think sometimes the divisions that I see in comedy or that a lot of comedians see are different than the way they might be bunched in the mind of an audience member or sort of, you know, a non-comedian. I don't necessarily see it in terms of one comedian being clean or one comedian being dirty or one comedian being old and one comedian being young or black or white. I think of it more in terms of who's a more narrative comedian as opposed to sort of a one-liner comedian. Who's telling stories and who's telling jokes? And, of course, obviously, most good comedy is a hybrid of the two. But you look at someone like Louis C.K., and he's actually sort of telling longer narrative stories, that there are jokes along the way. And in that sense, I find it very much like a Bill Cosby. And then you look at somebody like, you know, Mitch Hedberg or, you know, Dimitri Martin or even somebody like Jerry Seinfeld even, and it's more kind of little nuggets that kind of stand alone in that they're kind of the art is more in the joke craft than it is the expression of actual emotions or feelings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I was just thinking, my wife and I saw Louis C.K. open for Ricky Gervais, of all people, I guess it was earlier this year, at the theater in Madison Square Garden. And I could see Louis C.K. sitting in an audience for Bill Cosby. I could not imagine Bill Cosby sitting in the audience for Louis C.K.
That is quite possibly true.
Funny guy. I mean, I think he's really funny. But, yeah. I want to talk a little bit about some current event stuff with you. And we didn't prepare for this, so I'm telling you this a moment ahead. I have a clip I want to play of you on Countdown, and then I'll come back and talk to you a little bit so you can get your head around this. This is Christian Finnegan on Countdown with Keith Olbermann, although this was on a day that Keith was off and David Schuster, who is infinitely less funny, but interesting nonetheless, was sitting in. So folks, listen to this.
Comedian Christian Finnegan, his one-hour comedy special, Au Contraire, debuts May the 8th. Christian, great to see you again.
Always a pleasure.
So now there are some who might say that one of those presidents lied us into war and the other one lied about oral sex. But do you think any of that will come up at this joint appearance conversation?
Nah, I mean, it's a private event, so it's probably going to be a pretty toothless affair. It'll probably be like seeing like two aging bands come out of retirement. Like Clinton will be one of those boring jam bands like Fish, where he'll try to mesmerize you with a 14-minute guitar solo, and Bush will be like Right Said Fred. Like, he knows he's a punchline, and you know what? He just doesn't care. He's going to show up, he's going to play his hit, and then he's going to get his check and go home. It's about getting paid, David.
This event is expected to be closed to the media. I realize I may be a bit biased on this issue, but isn't there something very wrong about all of us not getting to see Bubba and W in a talk fest like this?
Can you imagine the ratings, David? It would just be insane. And if they knew that the American public was watching, then they'd go for the jugular and ask each other the tough questions. Like Bush would say, all right, Bill, so curious here, you and Hillary, seriously, you guys had an arrangement, right? And then Clinton could turn around and say, okay, George W. Bush, quick, what's 9 times 9? We're talking TV bedlam.
The group that arranged this is the same one that paid for former President Bush to speak in Calgary just this past March. What is it about Canada and its fascination with our former presidents?
Well, you know, them having Bush and Clinton on the same stage allows Canada to indulge its simultaneous inferiority and superiority complex. I'm actually impressed that they care about our ex-presidents. If not for Google, we wouldn't know who their current president is. Oh, and by the way, I know that Canada does not have a president. They have a czar, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that Harper guy. Yeah. All right, on to Mr. Blagojevich. He will not be allowed to perform what is described as sweaty physical tasks to avoid elimination in that reality show on NBC.
What I call Thursday.
Yeah. Your thoughts?
Listen, I have a message for U.S. District Judge James Zagel. In the words of Keith Olbermann, how dare you, sir? Maybe you don't know this up on your lofty bench, but America needs this. This is what we call bread and circus, Your Honor. Okay, I mean, and there is legal precedent here. I mean, the Supreme Court ruled that a public figure under indictment cannot leave the country unless it involves building a tree fort with a former member of the Pointer Sisters. It's Plessy versus Ferguson.
The former governor is evidently pretty broke because his lawyer is also trying to get permission from the judge to use $2 million left over in campaign funds to pay for attorney's fees. Sounds like Blago's in quite the pickle.
I kind of get the feeling that the Vitch will somehow stumble across some extra money. And if he doesn't, there is cash to be made for that guy. I mean, there's personal appearance money, there's hairbrush sponsorships, maybe even a video podcast, like a subscription thing, like call it Lonely Gov 16.
Comedian Christian Finnegan, whose Comedy Central special airs May the 8th. Christian, thanks as always.
Goodbye, sir.
I know, it went on a little long, but I just wanted to hear it again.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you.
Sir, now, so as we're sitting here, fascinatingly, news has been made just before we went on the air with this. Sarah Palin has resigned as the governor of Alaska. What do you make of that?
You know, I literally just turned on the TV. I had been out for a few hours, and I turned on the TV about 20 minutes before I called you, and so I'm still trying to take this in right now. It's very absurd, and I will say this, man, it's not timid, you know. There is something to be said for someone who's just willing to say, hey, you know what, I know that I'm going to be made fun of on this, and I know that, you know, she's not trying to have it both ways. I will say it. She's clearly coming out and saying, no, I am a completely political animal. I want to be a star, and there's something to be said for that. I mean, what's said is what. I don't think the word dignity would be found anywhere in there, but there's, you know, like I said, I'm still trying to take this in. I mean, of course, you're kind of waiting for the other shoe to fall. You're waiting to find out, is there some sort of, maybe does she have an Argentinian mister? Is the male form of mistress, mister? Maybe she has a lover in Argentina that she's been hiding. Maybe it's some sort of GOP key party that we haven't heard about yet. Maybe more pregnant children of some sort. Who knows? But all I know is she keeps it interesting. I will give her that. She is the Michael Jordan of sort of political nonsense.
Do you think there's any chance that her timing is connected to another recent news event, that maybe she's decided to resign so she could pursue custody of Michael Jackson's kids?
Oh, if only. That would be, a perfect sort of high – I was going to say high culture meets low culture, but they're both pretty much low culture, aren't they? Well, she does know how to take care of children, as we know. Maybe she's going to take ownership of the chimp or the llama, which would be nice. Who's to say?
Now, these Republican governors, they just keep providing more material. Did you have any thoughts on Mark Sanford, the reigning governor of South Carolina, at least as of this hour?
Well, it is just amazing how brazen and silly it is. And I will admit, there for a while there, I kind of took my hat off to the guy. I was like, all right, this dude has been dumbstruck by love, and he should have just gone for it. He should have just quit. At a certain point, once you get busted, you might as well go all the way with it. He might as well move to Argentina and be with this woman, because at least then he's sort of a tragic figure of some sort. You know, it's what I call the Woody Soon-Yi scenario. You can't, once you've gotten caught having sex with your common-law wife's daughter, you pretty much have to keep having sex with it.
Yeah.
And then all this news comes out about all these other women that he's, quote-unquote, not crossed the sex line with, and you're like, oh, okay, you're not a tragic figure at all. You're just kind of a scumbag on a power trip, which is delightful, is delightful. It makes me feel like, I feel like politicians need to temper their scandals a little bit more. We need to sort of spread them out over a period of time. I feel like this is way too much stimulus for the Chris Matthews of the world. You got to know that it's killing them all to not be in the office, leaving early for this three-day weekend with this Palin thing going down. It's like, you just imagine that Chris Matthews is just bashing his head on the table right now. Why aren't I at work? Why aren't I at work?
Well, Andy Borowitz has already sent out a bulletin about how upset comedians around the world are that Palin has resigned.
Well, I think that's kind of an absurd angle to take on, just because it's not like she's going away. You know, if anything, she's going to be, you know, she's going to be a special guest on Carson Daly next week. I mean, she's going to be start showing up on Money soon. I mean, I have a feeling that we are not going to get rid of her anytime soon. She's going to be doing she's going into the studio with Will.i.am, if I'm not mistaken, which would be a meeting of the two most awful people in America. But moving on, this is my personal opinion.
Now, I mentioned earlier that you're not a man who's afraid to throw in a fart joke, and I wonder if you'd indulge me before we wrapped up in one more clip.
Go it, clip away.
All right, folks, here's Christian Finnegan from All Country.
I'm at this point in my life where I feel like my body is starting to betray me. Everyone, tell me this isn't great. This happened to me about a couple weeks ago. I was in an office building completely by myself. There was nobody within eyeshot, and I got on the elevator, and I pressed my floor, and as I'm waiting for the elevator doors to close, I farted, and and the smell began to rise. Before any of you judge me, there is not one person in this room right now who has not had a moment where you were like, oh my God, I made that. Did I eat a corpse that I forgot about? Not a big deal, because there was nobody there, right? Literally tumbleweeds rolling by. Here's where it gets weird. For whatever reason, the elevator doors stay open for about like 5 weeks, right? As if there was like a voice from the heavens saying, attention, look at what this man has done. It was like the telltale fart, essentially, is what this was. Thank you, English majors. So I'm starting to get tense about it. I'm like, uh-oh, this could be bad. Eventually, the doors start to jiggle a little. I'm like, okay, looks like I'm going to dodge this bullet. At that moment, three office people come running around the corner screaming, holy elevator, holy elevator. I'm like, oh, let me get that for you. Close, 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 close. Doors coming together. At the very last possible moment, this guy gets his hand in between. The doors open up again, and I just lose my fucking mind, right? I was like, oh, who are you? Why are you in my bedroom? And I just sort of push through, and I keep walking. They're like, what's that guy's problem? I don't even look back. And as the doors are coming together, in a moment of perfect symmetry, I just hear this woman say, oh, dear God.
So...
that is the best Poe fart joke you will ever hear.
I think so.
By the way.
Yeah.
Very
I think
rare.
So. I've heard it over and over again in clipping it and editing it. I just, you know, it's great stuff. How has your act changed since the last release, Two for Flinching? Has it evolved much? Are you still pretty much the guy that you were?
Well, no, I definitely think it's evolved. I think I've changed. I think that what I'm doing now, generally speaking, and even in the material that I've been working on since Au Contraire, it's becoming a little bit more focused and a little bit more, the point of view is a little bit more identifiable. I feel like when you start doing comedy, here's where I launch into a very pretentious metaphor, so I apologize. You learn how to paint the bowl of fruit first, and then you start creating your own style. And I feel that my first CD, which I, you know, I'm very fond of, it was a good document of where I was in 2006 when it was released. And it was kind of, I had learned how to write jokes. Like, here's 45, 50 minutes of jokes, of things that I think are funny. Mm-hmm. And whereas I feel like Au Contraire, there's a few more identifiable through lines. I think you have a good idea, a better idea of who I am as a person, and I think it'd be easier to describe me as a human being listening to Au Contraire than it would be listening to Two for Flinching. I feel like the jokes in Two for Flinching I'm very proud of, but I don't feel like you necessarily get an image of who that comedian is. So that's, you know, in a way, I think that it slightly narrows my appeal. There are certainly people who are fans of Two for Flinching that aren't as crazy about where I am now, but I feel like the people who are fans of mine are real fans of mine, and they're not just sort of like, oh, let's go see some comedy, and whoever's there, we're going to laugh at. For better or for worse, I'm becoming more specific in what I do and the kinds of things I like to talk about on stage, and it tends to be, the stuff I'm doing now tends to be a little bit more pretentious in a feat and all of those things I was saying before. It just seems to be where my mind goes. I really like taking a lowbrow concept and really prettying it up with a bunch of silly words, you know, taking a fart joke and making an Edgar Allan Poe joke, or taking a very high concept, very lofty premise and rubbing it in the dirt. Like, that's always fun. Like, I think my favorite moment on Countdown was when I was able to, I don't even remember what the premise was, but I referred to Twyla Tharp as a cock blocker. And I just, I love that dichotomy of, like, you know, taking, you know, a very lofty, you know, Twyla Tharp, you know, famous choreographer, you know, the mother of modern dance, and, you know, calling her a cock blocker is very hilarious to me.
I like that. Well, listen, I want to tell everybody that you can catch Christian Finnegan in concert by checking for upcoming dates at his website, which is www. What was that?
I said that's all.
Okay.
Then I did like a triple snap with my fingers.
www.christianfinnegan.com. It's all solid. Christian, you can spell that. FINNEGAN.com. You can also order his DVD, Au Contraire, there on his site or on MrMedia.com. And
indeed. Facebook and Twitter and the section of Craigslist. No,
you want to? Yeah, what section of Craigslist do they find you on?
No, okay.
Are you on? But you're on Twitter and Facebook.
I am indeed. I am. I tried to hold off on Twitter for as long as I could, but I'm not going to try to butcher some quote. I tried to stay strong against the tide of history, but eventually, you know, I'm a comedian, I'm a promotional person, so I had to join Twitter, and I'm actually having kind of a fun time with it because it's a fun way to just kind of throw out a silly joke that you thought of 30 seconds before, where it might not be something that kind of sustains itself for a whole, it's maybe not worth doing a whole stand-up bit about, but if you have a funny thought about salt shakers, you can just kind of toss it out into the ether.
Hmm. Or something timely on Mark Sanford or Sarah Palin.
Yeah, I try to not do that. I mean, I actually try to not do that. I try to keep all political, a lot of my political or pop culture type material relegated to television, because I just think that form works better. I personally, I'm not a huge fan of sort of quote-unquote political comedians. Like, hey, did you guys hear about the filibuster? You know, like that doesn't really excite me, you know, as a comedian. But
all right. Well, Christian, it's been a lot of fun watching your new DVD and getting to talk to you today. And just want to thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
That's very, very kind of you, and I appreciate it. And I hope that we are now officially e-friends.
I think that's coming.
we're inter-pals. Okay.
Oh, God. Well, and on that very curious note, thank you so much for being on this show, and continued good luck.
Toodles.
Toodles. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And, folks, for more comedy interviews, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Lisa Lampanelli, Michelle Ballin, Jason Stewart, Ant, Robert Schimmel, Bob Alper, The Whitest Kids You Know, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media. casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Digital Journal, Pointer Online, MySpace, Facebook, NetVibes, Multiply, Zanga, Friendster, Orkut, FriendFeed, Bebo, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, MediaFly, couldn't make it, Podfeed.net, PageFlakes, Blueberry, Eons, Behente, Zencast, Zimbio, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media in iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews within the podcast section of iTunes and click the free subscribe button. It's that easy. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day to spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.